Okay, so I guess it's time to start. So good morning, everybody, and welcome to this Blackboard lecture. So don't be scared by the view graph. I just wanted to show one view graph, and I hope you enjoyed the barbecue today. So that's a view of our university in Kaiserslautern, and this is just one view graph for Andrew. I wanted to show you Aquarius. So the size of Pluto is indeed smaller than Aquarius, of course, only on the projection. Okay, good. Anyway, so this was a little bit starting joke. So now what I would like to do today is to tell you a little bit about what we were working on topology in open quantum systems. It's probably almost impossible to make a comprehensive lecture on that in this 1.5 hour, but I'll try my best. And of course, it will be heavily biased on the stuff which we did ourselves. Okay, so the first question is, of course, why are we interested in topological states of matter at all? And this is carrying owls to Athens, I guess. But nevertheless, let me remind you, there are a few things. There's topological protections, so the boundary between the different topological systems. We can have edge states and edge transport, and there's protection by the fact that the systems are topological. Well, secondly, there is quantized bulk transport in insulators. So if you have an insulator, you can still have a quantized transport, which gives rise to the quantum Hall effect. And by now, it's important because it also defines the resistance normal, right? And certainly, topological systems can have quite exotic quantum states, anions and abelian and non-abelian anions as excitations, and they can use them for topological quantum computing. Okay, good. But why do we care about open systems? Well, I mean, there are a few reasons you could come up with. The first thing is we are not living at T equal to zero, and we don't want to cool all the time. Probably the experimentalist would join me in saying that this might be nice to not have to do that. And the second question you can ask is, typically, topological systems have the problem that as soon as you add losses, so if you have particle losses, then all these nice features go away. So the question is, can we somehow compensate particle losses, for example, by adding some pumping mechanism which provides additional particles? But then, of course, what we are talking about are no longer pure states in general, but density matrices, mixed states. And we could, for example, consider steady states of open-driven systems. And this actually adds another interesting piece of protection to the whole game. Because if you consider the state space, and if you consider systems which have a steady state somewhere, and if the steady state is unique, what it means is that all trajectories, if you deviate from the system, they will automatically drive you back into the steady state. So there's a built-in internal protection. So therefore, it might be interesting to ask about, can we extend the notion of topology to open systems, to density matrices, finite temperature as a special case, but not only, but maybe also so to steady states of driven systems. Now, I have to make a number of disclaimers for the following talk, because I cannot cover everything. So what I want to look at here are specifically one- and two-dimensional lattice models with periodic boundary conditions. And for the sake of simplicity, I will, for the moment, also consider only Hamiltonians, which are number-conserving. Which means that I'm not looking at topological superconductors for now, but at Chern-insulated and topological insulators. Now, on the side of the topological insulators, almost everything is understood on the side of non-interacting systems, where basically the Hamiltonian, if we have translation invariance, can be decomposed in K modes. And everything is described essentially by a matrix, by a Hamiltonian matrix in K-space. In one dimension, this Hamiltonian depends on only on one parameter, K. And in that case, in order to have something topologically interesting, you should add in dependence on some other parameter, which, will, as it will turn out later, has to be periodic, so some other parameter lambda. If we are in 2D, then we can just use the momenta in x and y directions, and since we are in a since we have periodic boundary conditions, we basically have the space of the parameters as a torus. As a two-dimensional torus. If you go to interacting systems, or if we add this order where we cannot easily make this decomposition in K-space, then one can consider something else. One can look at a shift operator, a momentum shift operator in the direction x or y direction or any angle in between. And so this x and y are the position operators of all particles, the x components of all particles and the y components of all particles, and then one can look at the properties of the ground state of a shifted Hamiltonian, where you apply this shift operator from the left onto the right. So you're looking for the canonically transformed system. Now, all of the interesting features in topological states are basically related to the fact that we have some integer-valued topological invariants. And there are, one can make different classifications, but so I would say that in principle two directions. The first one are churn class systems, where typically your time reversal is broken. So these are things like the quantum Hall effect, the lattice model, the lattice variant of the quantum Hall effect, the Hofstadter model, one-dimensional model like Reis-Mähle or Zuschriefer-Heger. And there are these other type of systems where time reversal is not broken. And these are, for example, quantum spin Hall effect topological insulators. And they are typically described by some Z2 type invariants, which have only two variables. Now, in this talk, I will restrict myself only on these type of systems. And so let me start with discussing the non-interacting systems.
Sorry, Michel, the yes. Word's a little small to read from here. Can you read that aloud, that middle word between QHE and Hofstadter?
Oh, topological insulators?
No, on the left.
Oh, on the left.
The one that you're planning to work on.
Oh, Reis-Mähle. No, yeah, okay, so basically what I'm saying is I will only consider this class here. This is a Reis-Mähle model. I will discuss it right now.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, so just wait a second and then you will see it. Okay, so let me start with non-interacting systems. In fact, I will probably have time only at the very end to flash one or two results on interacting ones. And okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is in order to approach the question of topological invariance, I want to talk about the so-called Zach phase, which is nothing else than the Berry phase. Talk about polarization and Berry curvature. Okay, so the first very trivial or very simple model I want to consider is a one-dimensional lattice model. This is a Reis-Mähle model, which has a unit cell of two sides. These are fermions, and they can hop between these sides. These are the B sides, and these are the A sides. And there can be an energy difference between the A sides and the B sides, plus minus delta. And there is an alternating hopping amplitude, T1, T2, in that system. Now, we can easily write, so this is this Reis-Mähle model. And we can easily write the Hamiltonian in K-space overall. Okay, so you immediately see this is a model which has, since it has a unit cell of two, it has two bands, and the energies are just plus minus square root of delta squared plus T1 squared T2 squared plus 2T1 T2 cosine k. And if I would draw this, you would have an upper band and a lower band. Zero minus pi and pi. Okay, so this is very simple, one-dimensional lattice model. Now, as you can see from looking at the expression of the energies, there's a closing of the energy gap between the two bands if delta is zero and T1 minus T2 is zero. Okay? So this is something to keep in mind. Now, if you want to look at the if you want to solve this problem, then we can introduce the single particle eigenfunctions. And these are those log states, un of k, and n is 0 or 1. Now, this is the, let's call it the zeroth band, and this the first band. Now, sometimes, what I now want to do is I want to translate from the Bloch states to Wannier states. So I make a Fourier transform. I define Wannier states of the nth band essentially as 1 over 2 pi integral over the Brillouin zone, dt minus I. Kj n of k. And now let's do the ask the following. What is the center of mass of these Wannier functions? Why this is important will come in a minute. So let's ask these Wannier functions are living in the unit cells. And we can, of course, ask where the center of mass of the Wannier function is in one of these unit cells is actually sitting. And so if you do this, we ask for this. And well, for this, it's easy to see that the application of the X operator on the Wannier function, we just plug this in here, integral dx, this is in, integral dk, and this is now j e to the I kj, okay, so now what you can see is we can just generate this J here by differentiating this with respect to K. And this here, just minus I dK, minus I, it's plus I of that. And then we can make a partial derivative and get the derivative with respect to K over to the Wannier function. So as a, to the Bloch function. So as a consequence, we find that the center of mass of the Wannier function is I over 2 pi integral over the Brillouin zone of the Bloch wave function and the derivative of the Bloch wave function with respect to k. And now this is the first important thing to notice. What you see here on the right-hand side is nothing else than a Berry phase. It's a question of what is the phase changing of the Bloch state if I run it through the Brillouin zone. And since the Brillouin zone is periodic, the resulting phase which comes out here which is a Berry phase, is a gauge invariant and is actually called the Zak phase. So call this object the Zak phase. And we see an important relation. Namely, we see that the center of mass of the Wannier functions is, which I refer as polarization. Polarization simply because it says that the charge center within this unit cell is located relative to the unit cell, and this is essentially given by the geometric phase of Bloch states. Yeah. In this case. Called Zak phase. Good.
So
and now?
Is it important? I mean, the polarization is only defined up to Lattice space. So it's
exactly.
Modulo A. So is it important for the following?
No, it's not. Yeah. So I apologize. I some things I actually put under the right. But you're right. It's of course only relative to the. Relative to the motion is in the lattice. Okay, so but now let's do something.
Yeah. One more question. So what exactly allowed you to replace x hat by j?
Well, this is the position operator, and I would, for example, write it I have a tight binding model, so I have positions which are defined by this j in the lattice. And I stay within this tight binding approximation, which I used for the derivation of this model anyway, and then the x operator is just j.
But if it's that, then wouldn't it be diagonal from the outset? Wouldn't on your left hand side wouldn't you have w j w bracketed? Because x would act on w and j and just yield j times w and j.
Sorry, what do you say? Can you say it again?
I'm saying when you, so if you were allowed to replace x by j, right, then it would already be diagonal in the Wannier basis.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And then you wouldn't need to do the integral in the first place.
Right, okay, yeah, Okay, so you have to take this a little bit with a grain of salt. Basically, I used a real space representation of the operator, which I swept under the rug here, in order to get this expression. We can go through this in more detail and make it more accurate.
I think the one derivation I remember involves the size. So instead of the use, you use the size, which is e to the I kx times u.
Mm-hmm.
And then the x operator acts also on the position eigenstates that the psi is built from. Whereas the Bloch state is only built from states within the unit cell, but the size they are built from states within the unit cell tensored position states.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is I'm afraid I will have a couple of these kind of things which are very short-handed and not probably not quite correct in a strict sense. So I hope you bear with me in that point. Okay, so the thing that I really wanted to ask now is the question, what happens if we now make an adiabatic motion in parameter space? Yeah, so this is a one-dimensional model, and I now can write a parameter space, and let me write it here only because I can eliminate one of the scales, of course. let me write it as a delta in T1 minus T2, then we have seen that the only point where the two bands touch is the origin. And now I could ask the following. What if I make the parameters delta in T1 and T2 time dependent, and I run a closed loop in this parameter space? And then I could ask myself, what is the change of the center of mass of the Wangi center? And this is obviously 1 over 2 pi I integral d lambda the derivative of the Zach phase. And now you see something interesting. If this is a closed path, and this expression here on the right hand side we had expressed as an integral over another closed path, then that means we can write dx is 1 over 2 pi and integral d lambda integral dk pi. If I take the lambda derivative in and make a little bit of more manipulations, this is d lambda u of k dk u of k minus dk u of k d lambda u of k. This here is an integration over a torus. And mass tells us that an integration of a closed torus over such a function, and this function is called the Berry curvature, and it depends on, in this case, on the two parameters, namely k and lambda, because it's a one-dimensional model. And now you see why I said at the beginning, in one-dimensional systems, I always want to have the dependence on some other additional parameter. So we see this is a closed integral over something which looks like a magnetic field. And if you integrate magnetic field and you calculate the flux over a closed surface, what has to come out is basically the number of charges which are inside this volume. So this is an integer. Okay, so right here. So we find here a winding number. Basically, the question of how does the Zach phase change if I rotate in a parameter space once, this defines an integer winding number. And this is a winding number related to an integer topological invariant. Okay, so now in this way, we have basically constructed, or we have seen the emergence of a topological integer, which has a direct relation to physics. Namely, it says it tells us about the change of the position of the Wannier centers. If you want to make this a little bit more pictorial, then let's just assume that this parameter lambda runs from 0 to 2 pi, so let's make it a phase. But this point and this point are the same. And now I draw the lattice, and I know that if I make this loop in parameter space from here to here, and I do it adiabatically, I end up in the same state which I started from, right? So as a consequence, if I look at the centers of the Wannier functions, Let's say at the beginning they are all on these places. Now, what can happen? Well, after this full cycle, the Vanya centers, of course, have to come back to themselves, because the system is, we are just making a periodic change, right? But there are two things which can happen. One thing that can happen is that they all make this such an excursion and come back to exactly the same place. Then in that case, the winding number would just be zero. However, there's also the possibility that they are not coming back to themselves, but just move on, say, to the next place. Right? We can have motion like this. Again, all centers are mapped to all centers because the system is periodic, but in the course of the of this protocol, we find that there is a non-trivial winding. And in fact, if we calculate this for this model, for this Rice-Mailer model, we find exactly this. We find that there is a winding mu equal to plus 1 and mu equal to minus 1 in the upper band. So there is a theorem which says that the number, the sum of all of these numbers has to vanish. Okay, good. So now, why should we care? Why is it interesting? And what has this to do, the existence of such a topological invariant to any physical quantities? And now what I want to argue is that this gives rise to a quantized transport in the bulk. And then this is, in fact, also the reason why in the quantum Hall effect we see this quantized conductivity. And, well, this is also known under the name of the Taulis pump. Okay, so let's have a look in the system of fermions in an insulating state. So we have our two bands, and we have every state of the lower band is occupied. So this is obviously an insulator. And now let's assume that at t equal to zero, our wave function is e to the ikx and is a Vanya function unk at t equal to zero. And now we want to ask the question, what is the state at some later time? So now what I'm doing is I'm changing the parameters of the Hamiltonian in an adiabatic way. I can do this because the system is gapped. So adiabatic theorem tells me that if I do it sufficiently slowly, then the system will just follow the eigenstates. And therefore, I can now calculate the eigenstate at some later time. And so this will be the let me always do this in the lowest band, so n is zero. And but now I have to keep I have to take into account that my Hamiltonian is changing. And I get a non-adiabatic correction. This is first non-adiabatic correction in the system. Good. And now what I want to calculate is the is the current in the system. So I'm interested in the question. I make a cut here in this model. What sort of current is flowing through this cut here? And okay, so for this, I look at the velocity operators of the electrons, which is as dx by dt, or is hx. I drop some factors of mass, etc., so I hope you don't mind. So this is dh of k and t by dk. And as a consequence, we can calculate the expectation value of the current. It gets two contributions. The first contributions is coming from the derivative of the energy with respect to k. And there is another contribution . So we can calculate the average velocity of the particles, and then we can make use of the fact that we can express this quantity here. So just by making use of the eigenvalue relation of the Hamiltonian, we find that this is E0 minus En times dk. UNK, U0K. So all what I used here is the fact that UNK is an eigenstate of H with, say, energy EN, and U0 is an eigenstate of H with eigenvalue E0. Good. So the bottom line of that is that now my average velocity of a charged particle in this, of a particle in this system, will just be derivative of the energy with respect to k. And now you can see that this term, if I plug it in here, is just exactly the Berry curvature which we had already over there. So okay, so now we can ask ourselves, let us ask the question, what we are really interested in is the how many charges are actually transported in this one cycle in the parameter space across such a boundary. Okay, so for this, we integrate the velocity, so the current from in one cycle, so let's capital T be the cycle time, and now of course we have to take into account that not only one of the block states is filled, but we have very many, so we have to add the contributions from all of these occupied states. So we integrate k over 2 pi of the Brillouin zone, and then of the velocity operator for the states in the block state with momentum k. And what comes out is just the integral over the Berry curvature again. So. Good. So now we see the second important connection with the existence of a non-trivial topological invariant. We see if we fill this band completely with electrons and we make a adiabatic loop in parameter space, we get a particle transport which is integer quantized. We get exactly one particle moving to the right. And in fact, you could have guessed this already from this picture. So if each of the Wannier functions here is Wannier centers is occupied by one particle, and you have a winding which is plus one, then all of the particles move by one to the right. Okay, so the important thing that I would like you to remember are the following three things. Namely, we have a quantized or a non-trivial. Of course, this is only happens if the winding is non-trivial. If it's trivial, then there is no transport. And in fact, this here is very much related to the also to the quantum Hall effect. So, if we have seen, this is a topological invariant, which is quantized. Characterizes the band structure. We have seen that the change of the polarization or the center of mass of the the Wannier functions is quantized, and we have seen that this leads to a bulk transport. State. So these are the three things which essentially are equivalent as long as we are talking about systems in ground states and no mixed states whatsoever. Good. So this was basically a somewhat longer introduction which I needed to set the stage to talk about topological invariants for mixed states. And okay, so now the question is, how can we extend this scheme, or can we extend these notions if we have density matrices rather than pure states? And okay, so let me draw this. Geometric faces for mixed states and the first concept I want to discuss is an idea which was put forward by Uhlmann, and you can understand it maybe in the following way. If we ask ourselves where a Berry phase, or in the case of lattice models, a Zach phase is coming from, then we should remember that if you look at the space of all that all the physics is given by the projectors, not by the state itself, but by the projectors. But for each of these projectors, we can attach or associate to it basically a fiber bundle of states with some phase e to the I phi psi, right? So we can move up and down here. And all of them correspond to exactly the same physical state. So what you can see here is there is a U1 gauge degree of freedom. Namely, I can choose the phase arbitrarily. So now, suppose we are doing the following. We are now moving the state around in parameter space somehow. And let me call this parameter lambda here, and then at some other position, lambda plus d lambda, we could ask if we start with this particular choice of state, So with a given phase phi, where do we actually end up with? And this can be answered by a parallel transport, which basically says that my state, which I choose on along this line, is such that the distance between these states is minimal. And now I could ask myself, what's going to happen if I close this loop? So if I follow this instruction and I close this loop, where do I end up with? And the point is, I do not end up, in general, at the same state where I started from, but I get a phase difference. And this phase difference is a Berry phase, or for the case of a this Berry phase is exactly the phase which is picked up here after this loop. So it's a integral over state psi d lambda psi. Good. And now the idea of Ullmann was, can we extend this to density matrices? I mean, on first glance, it doesn't make sense to define a Berry phase or a Zach phase for density matrices because we don't have state vectors anymore. We have density matrices. But now, Ullmann's idea was the following. I can take a density matrix and always write it as a product of two matrices. And of course, if the density matrix is of dimension n by n, then also these matrices omega have to have a structure which reproduce this n by n after multiplication. Now, you see that also here there's now a gauge freedom. Yeah, here we had the gauge freedom, namely the phase phi, which is arbitrary, and only this this construction of parallel transport told us that if we make one complete loop, then the gauge itself is irrelevant. But if we stick to one, then we will always find a gauge invariant phase difference in a closed loop, which is this Berry phase. So, and also here we have a gauge freedom. Namely, you can immediately see that we can replace omega by omega u and omega dagger by u dagger omega dagger, and we will, of course, have exactly the same density matrix. The only problem is now that this gauge freedom is now a un gauge freedom. The n is a dimension of Hilbert space, so it's a huge it's a huge space which we have to work with. And but in principle, one can now make a similar construction as I've shown above. So let's again write here the space of density matrices, which is the product of this matrices W and W prime. And then for each realization, we can choose a matrix W, which has a gauge, a UN gauge degree of freedom. Namely, we can multiply with a matrix, and with this matrix, we can basically move the object up and down, and this is now, a UN transformation. Now I can make the same type of discussion. I can say I make a closed loop in parameter space, and I'm asking myself if I'm an infinitesimally place later, how do I connect from here to here? I can define a parallel transport, and this is what Ullmann was defining. And basically, the parallel transport is saying that the matrix in a properly defined norm should be minimized. And then we can make, again, the closed loop in parameter space. And then what we end up with is now not a phase, but a general UN matrix, which connects the two. Well, this UN matrix is a little bit unhandy, because we started from systems which are described by topological quantum numbers. And now we have not only one number, we have a huge amount of numbers and corresponding to the size of this matrix. So now what people have suggested is to use the reduction of that, namely to introduce the called the Ullmann phase. And this Ullmann phase is an argument of such a closed loop integral over the trace of W. Okay, you see, that looks very similar to the things which we defined here, the Zach phase. And due to the trace operation here, this is only a U1 variable. Okay, and in fact, it turns out, or we can show, that this is a proper topological winding number in 1D models. There's a paper by Wang and Avron in PL 2014, and Rivas and Martin de Garo. And they exactly showed this, and what they found is that there's a finite temperature phase transition or topological phase transition in some of the models, and what they looked at is a Kreutz ladder and Majorana chain and the Schrieffer-Hager model. Okay, so with this construction of the Ullmann phase, one can look at finite temperature states of one-dimensional topological models, and see at what temperature the binding of this phase here vanishes, and therefore the system gets into a topological trivial phase. Clearly, at infinite temperature, you would assume that the system is topological trivial, right? Because infinite temperature essentially means, for example, in this Riesz-Mehle model, that you have equal population of the lower and the upper band. So all of the topological features of this band and this band are exactly averaged out because of the opposite winding numbers, and therefore it should become topological trivial. Okay, so far one could say that's a nice story. However, there's a problem. And what is the problem? And for this I have to.
One question.
Sure.
So topology is usually defined with respect to what you call a continuous deformation and what you call a discontinuous deformation. And here, normally what people do is they use the gap for that. So they say if we have a gap, we know what adiabatic deformations are. Mm-hmm. And now we don't have a gap anymore, right? So what are your adiabatic deformations that leave this invariant?
Well, let me postpone this question slightly. All what I'm asking for is precisely is I'm looking at the finite temperature state for a continuous set of parameters of the Hamiltonian. So what I'm saying is that I assume that my system at each of these points in space assumes the Gibbs state, finite temperature state of the of the Hamiltonian, right? So adiabaticity has to be taken here with a grain of salt, because I know that the system is no longer gapped, and therefore I'm strictly speaking cannot make a time evolution and leave the system adiabatic. But I can, understand it in the sense that I change, I make changes in parameter space and look at each of the points in parameter space. Look at the equilibrium state. So that's the way this is defined and meant. You can of course ask the question.
I'm just wondering: is this physical? Like, does it actually stay in the state?
Okay. Yeah. And the answer is it does. The answer is it does not stay in the state, but the observable quantities remain quantized, even though. So you're thinking about the time-dependent protocol, right? So for example, I would make this pump. Now I could ask myself, what are physical consequences? But let me just postpone this for a second, because I will come back to exactly this question by now pointing out what the problems are. So the first problem is, fails if you go to 2D. Now, if you want to describe a two-dimensional system, then we can easily map it to one-dimensional systems if this is periodic, as we assumed. So we are periodic in x and y direction, so it's actually a torus. Then I can make a Fourier transform in the x direction. And then basically what I get are independent one-dimensional models, which now depend on kx. So I can define an Ullmann phase, which now depends on kx. Right? But they are independent one-dimensional models. Now, the same thing I can do in the opposite direction. So I can do it in the y direction. So I can make a Fourier transform in the y direction. And now I get an Ullmann phase, which depends on ky. Right? Good. And therefore, I could now calculate the winding number in two different ways. I could just integrate the Ullmann phase in the y direction, or I write here C prime for a reason which is, I guess, apparent by now, but I can do these two integration. And in a paper by Jan-Karl Budrich and Sebastian Dier, PRB 2015, they looked at a very simple two-dimensional model. This is a modified I always get this wrong. Diboljan model. And what they basically found is that, first of all, it's clear that this model for this parameters which they choose at t equal to 0, has a well-defined churn number of -1. What is clear is that at t equal to infinity, the topological number has to go to 0 because this is a maximally mixed state, so we would not expect anything to happen at infinite temperature. But the problem is that if you calculate the critical temperature with this, so there's a transition point in between, right? But the problem is if you calculate the critical temperature with this quantity, or you calculate the critical temperature with this quantity, you find that the two are not the same. And what does it mean? It basically means that the thing which we had here, right? We had a Berry curvature. We had a proper defined Berry curvature. And then we could use mass, which tells us that the integral over the Berry curvature over a closed surface has to be an integer. So the consequence is that while we can define an Ullmann phase, we can obviously not construct a proper Berry curvature, and therefore we get these problems here. Okay, so this is bad because that basically says, if you want to discuss finite temperatures, things like this are out. Now, what other options do we have? Well, let's have a look at physical observable quantities, like the transport of particles. And that comes back a little bit to your question. So let's have a look at particle transport. And what's the problem? The problem is that in finding exactly this quantized transport, we needed to make use of the fact that each state in the lowest Bloch band is occupied by exactly one particle. This gave us this integration over the in the Brillouin zone. And so at finite temperature, of course, what's going to happen is that some of these particles will just move up to the upper band. Here we have a winding of minus one. Here we have a winding of plus one. So as a consequence, the particle transport now can be calculated, of course, in the same way. But we have to take into account the occupation. First of all, we have to sum over all bands. In this case, 2. But then we have to multiply this with the probability that the state in the nth band is actually occupied. And then comes the Fourier curvature. And because of this object here, this thing is no longer quantized. And as a consequence, and in fact, if you numerically calculate it, it's maybe not so surprising. As if you look at the temperature versus the gap, then you find, and this is on the order of 1, and you find that as soon as it goes to the order of 1, the transport is no longer quantized. Okay, so this means also this bulk transport in insulating states is basically out. So does it mean that we have to give up the notion of topology in open systems? Obviously not, else I would not give this lecture here. So what is what comes to the rescue is the third object which we have. And this try to save space in this way, right? Much on the top. Good. In fact, the definition of this of the polarization which we have used so far, namely the center of mass of the Vanier centers, is not so useful. What is more useful is a modification which came which had been introduced by Vesta in 89, and basically he showed that for non-interacting systems, one can relate the polarization to write them in a different way, namely in this way. And this has the advantage that this is can also be used for periodic systems. So if you, the problem with that is that if it's an infinite system, it's ill-defined. So here now we could think of any sort of periodic system. Say it's a unit cell of 2, so we have L of these unit cells. And this x here is essentially 1 over L times So this is in second quantization. This is a particle number sitting on the J's unit cell. And this is S equal to 0. And this is S equal to 1. So this labels basically the positions within the unit cell. And the letter spacing just taken to be 1. What is important to see? You see, this is the imaginary part of a logarithm. So this is the phase of a complex number, or 2 pi phase. Phase of a complex number, and the second thing is that we can immediately see that we can generalize it to mixed states, because the expectation value of this shift operator in a pure state will just be translated into the trace over the density matrix X. Okay? And this defines what we called an ensemble geometric phase, is the imaginary part of the logarithm. Log of trace rho into the 2 pi of x. Okay. Some work of ourselves. PRB 2016, and and PRX in 2018 are the two relevant references. Good. So this is now a quantity which from which we can still hope that it survives. And indeed, it does. And do the right thing. Maybe it's the wrong side. That's much better. Good. So, in fact, we looked at this first for we analyzed this ensemble geometric phase first for non-interacting systems, and in fact, we looked at so-called Gaussian systems. Of fermions. Now, if we have an Hamiltonian which is bilinear, so has this structure of this type, now we are interested in the term of state. So we have a form of a density matrix which looks like this. This here is in fact a special case of a state which is called a Gaussian. And a Gaussian state can always be written in a form, in the following form, like the terminal state, and I put up here the adjoint in parentheses, because we can have either a density matrix which has the same number of creation and deletion operators, and it's a essentially a state where corresponding to a number conserving system, but we could in principle also have states which have two C operators or two C dagger operators. Now, the important thing is that the whole physics of Gaussian states is encoded in this matrix. So this matrix Gij is a single particle, was related to the single particle correlation matrix. And the nice thing about Gaussian systems is all there is to know are in the single particle correlations. And the precise relation is that the matrix elements of this are basically encoded in this matrix are all the single particle correlations. So what is nice about Gaussian systems? Fixed theorem holds, meaning higher order correlation functions can all be expressed in two-point correlation functions. Rho is fully determined. By G. And what is important is that if a rho remains Gaussian under time evolution, if the initial state is Gaussian, and Hamiltonian is quadratic. So if you have an Hamiltonian of this type, then the time evolution of a Gaussian state remains Gaussian. And we can allow for dissipation. But the dissipation has to be characterized by Lindblad operators, which have the structure. Which are linear in the and annihilation and creation operators. In particular, the steady state, if it's a unique steady state, of a Liouvillean. Now this Liouvillean is composed out of quadratic Hamiltonians and Lindblad operators, which are linear, and the creation annihilation operators. So by the way, dephasing does not belong to it, right? So dephasing is a non-Gaussian operation, but as long as you have only particle losses and particle pumping, then it is Gaussian. Okay, so you already see that at this point we can go away from unitary systems. We can even go away from unitary systems at zero temperature or at finite temperature. We can now also allow driven dissipative systems as long as the dissipation is characterized by simple enough Lindblad generators. Okay, so and one of the interesting results is now the following. So what we could show in this PRX paper, which are we could show that for every Gaussian state, polarization of the density matrix is equal to the polarization of a pure state plus some correction which scales away with system size. And this is the polarization of a pure state. And this means that every Gaussian density matrix, or the topology of any Gaussian state of fermions, can be related to the topology of a pure state. And this pure state is the ground state of some Hamiltonian and this fictitious Hamiltonian, which has been introduced by Sebastian Diehl in New Journal of Physics 2014, I think. This Hamiltonian is just the Hamiltonian of this of the single particle correlation matrix. One can also show, and I think this is can also show that the winding of the polarization and this is independent on system size. P of rho is exactly the same than the winding of this pure depolarization for this pure state. Simply the reason is that the winding of this has to be an integer. The winding of this has to be an integer. Therefore, the winding of this has to be also an integer, but an integer which scales away the system size, and the only one which can do it is zero. So therefore, topological invariance, which is really the winding of P, is always for all system sizes the same than for this fictitious ground state. Now, what does it mean? That means we can now use the whole machinery of classification of topological phases by symmetry classes. We can now apply here, because we have related the quantity to the ground state of an Hamiltonian. And it's known that, at least for the non-interacting systems, and the Gaussian systems are non-interacting ones, that all topological classes can be derived from the symmetry properties of the Hamiltonian, which in this case is the fictitious Hamiltonian. Among other things, a topological phase transition can happen if the gap of this fictitious Hamiltonian closes.
But now you don't get a phase transition, a thermal phase transition in your model.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I just want to come to it in a second. So for thermal states. And again, we do not need to consider thermal states. We do not need even to consider a system which has a Hamiltonian at all. We can consider systems which are only described by a Lindbladian, and as long as the state which results from that is Gaussian. But if we consider finite temperature states, then essentially this G is proportional to beta times H. And as a consequence, you see there's a topological phase transition. If the gap of the original Hamiltonian closes, well, that's not so surprising, or if beta becomes zero. So that's a topological phase transition only at infinite temperature. Which is a result which is different from the Ullmann phase calculation, but here that comes out directly that the phase transition can only happen at infinite temperature, at least for the Gaussian systems. So we have looked at a couple of examples, and you can find them in some papers. I can give you the references. So we looked at the Weiss-Mehle model at finite t, and all of these models which have a finite band, you can easily extend to negative temperatures, and then you see that at for all positive temperatures, we find a winding number of plus one. Then at infinite temperature, there's a phase transition, and for negative temperature, we get, of course, minus one, as one would expect. So the interesting thing is that the polarization basically makes some sort of a majority vote, because the topological, the single particle Chern numbers for the two bands have opposite sign. And the consequence of this was that the particle transport here breaks down, but the polarization has this nice property that it basically makes some sort of weighting and it makes a majority vote, saying as long as there are more particles in the lower band, the property is given by that one and not by the upper one. Now one can also look and purely dissipative systems. There's a PRB in 2016. Or one can do a two-dimensional systems, Harper or Harper-Hofstadter. This is what examples which we looked at. Now, I told you that for the Ullmann phase, there is no proper Barry connection. And as a consequence, one did find, for example, for this one particular model, that there are finite temperature phase transitions at different temperatures depending on which way one defines it. So one of the questions which I should answer now here is, well, can we construct the Barry connection or Barry curvature? And since we are late on time, let me just make this short. So we have actually looked exactly at the same model, and we found that for this Q-Zhang model, we indeed found that the winding of the ensemble geometric phase in the y direction is exactly the same than for the one in the x direction. So this seems to show that there is a Barry curvature which one can define, and in fact one can cut this a little bit short now. One can define this. And it turns out this is just a trace of density matrix. Exists the Barry curvature, and that guarantees that in 2D this Chern number, topological invariant, always exists. Good. So now I have maybe five more minutes. Let me make two comments. Since we have seen that the gapfulness of the system is not really relevant anymore, right? If you can go to arbitrary high temperatures, then the many-body state is not gapped in that system. Right? So one could ask the question, is it important that we have fermions? Well, as long as we have a t equal to 0, one can sort of understand, because at t equal to 0, all the fermions and half filling, we fill the lowest band, and therefore we have an insulating state. But if these topological feature survive also at finite temperature, the particle can hop in the excited band. So maybe that is not really important. So therefore, one can also ask the question, how about bosons? So if you look at the Gaussian states of bosons. Can we say something else? Well, what we find, however, is if you have Gaussian states of bosons, the polarization is always trivial. So in other words, if you have a bosonic systems, you always need interactions. Okay, so now I hope I have convinced you that one is able to construct a topological invariant, which is also applicable to density matrices. It's applicable to finite temperatures, at least for fermionic systems. For bosons, it doesn't give any interesting results. But now you could ask the question, so what? Why are we interested in? Well, I could argue if we find a measurable, and I didn't talk about a measurement scheme, an immeasurable invariant which is integer quantized, then there's a hope that we can see some physical consequences from that, even if you go to finite temperature. And so I just make this as a teaser and invite you for a discussion, maybe on one of the Fridays. So are there some observable effects? And the answer is yes, in the following sense. Suppose we have our finite temperature one-dimensional model, or maybe it's an open-driven system. So then we know that in the system itself, we will not have physical consequences like a quantized transport, because we don't have any finite temperature, so we see anything. There's nothing quantized left there. But what we could do is we could couple this to a second auxiliary system, which by itself is topologically trivial. And is prepared at zero temperature. Now, this is obviously a non-equilibrium system, right? You couple a finite temperature system to a zero temperature system. So what we would expect is that on long time scales, they will equilibrate, and then nothing interesting. The coupling of the auxiliary one doesn't make that much of a difference. So it's non-equilibrium. But one can show that for finite times, there is a quantized transport in the auxiliary system. Due to the fact that the other system is topologically non-trivial. And I don't have time to discuss this. It's clear that this holds only for finite times, but it's important to note that this is possible. So we can actually extract the topological properties of this finite temperature or dissipative system by the help of a degree of freedom, which is, at least at some initial time, is cooled. And that gives prospects of seeing interesting effects arising from this finite temperature topology also in some sort of experiments. Okay, so this was the first remark, and I'm happy to discuss this. And the second remark I want to make is on interactions, which I haven't talked about at all. In fact, this is a work in progress, but I can state a few things. The first thing is what is interesting is if you have interacting systems, you can have fractional topological charges. which, for example, manifests themselves that if you perform these pumps, these Taos pumps, then you get the transport of only a fraction of a charge. And this is related to degeneracies in the system. So one has to take this into account. And so our preliminary results are that also for the that for 1D interacting fermion systems, oh, we can't read this anymore, right? So I should write this here. So for 1D interacting fermion systems, one can show that the winding of the polarization because of the degeneracy, one can actually only calculate the so-called total churn number. I don't want to go into the details right now, but anyway, so we showed that the winding of this is the same than the winding of the ground state. Okay, so the 1D interacting fermion system at finite T. So, and the specific example which we looked at is Superlattice-Bose-Hubbard model, where you have non-local interactions, and the non-local interactions give rise to a mod insulating phase, not only at half filling, but at a quarter filling or lower fillings. And then you can see that exactly this property survives there. But this is quite a lot of work in progress. Okay, so my time is up. I hope I have convinced you that one can define topological invariance for mixed states, and that one can find some interesting relations coming out of that, and I've just made a teaser in this respect to what the possible physical observable applications are. So with this, thank you very much for the attention. And there have been not so many questions in between, which could mean that.
I'm still confused by your finding that the polarization of the mixed state is essentially given by this fictitious pure state polarization. So for larger systems, this correction term disappears and there's no temperature. So that's what I think physically is not intuitive.
That's right. But you should remember that these, I mean, from the point of physical intuition, what you're calculating is a phase, right? Or more precisely, maybe we should look a bit more on this relation, which is true for all system sizes. So that the invariant is really the winding of the polarization, not the polarization itself. The polarization is gauge, you can change by gauge, but choice of gauge, but not this the winding number. And this is always the same then for the ground state. And the only argument I can make is you're looking at a phase. And you're looking at the winding of a phase. And as long as this phase is well defined, and the system comes back to the state it started from, the only choice for a phase is to change by multiples of 2 pi, right? So therefore, this has to be an integer. Now you can ask yourself, what integer can this be? Now I can continuously reduce the temperature. And the terminal state will end up in the ground state. So the only integer which it could have picked up is that one from the ground state. But that's all what I can say in terms.
But does P still carry this physical interpretation of being polarization, charge difference, or not?
No. What it precisely is this object here, right? In the limit of non-interacting systems, you can directly show that this is related to the to the center of mass of the Runge function. But the problem is, of course, that at finite temperature, you have always all bands Runge function mixed in. So yes, it's still carriers, but it's not related to the transport, simply because it has mixture of all bands involved. Right? But if you only look at the face of this object, it gives you a majority decision essentially. Right? That's why you pick this up.
So what this seems to be calculating is essentially the phase or the winding number of the pure state, right? So, and the statement is that any Gaussian state can be seen as the ground state of some non-open Hamiltonian.
And then in the sense of its topological properties, yes. I mean, of course, the density matrix is not a pure state,
So I guess the question is, does this property, do changes in this polarization coincide with actual phase transitions of the original state rho?
Yes, they do, because, the connection is seen, of course, most easily here. If you have terminal states, then this G is basically proportional to the original Hamiltonian, right? So there are only two ways, as I said here, to close the gap of this. This is either you go to infinite temperature where everything gets trivial, or you have a closing of the gap of the Hamiltonian. So if there is a phase transition in the T equals zero system, you will also see it here.
And that will be will it become a thermal phase transition then? Say at beta equal 10, H closes the gap. What kind of transition does that imply for the thermal state?
I should say we have not really looked closer at the properties of the phase transition itself. So what is the classification of the phase transition? This we have not studied so far. So all what I can say is there will be an according phase transition. Is this be terminal? No, I don't think so. But I can't tell it exactly.
Because I'm just I guess what one would be afraid of is that there could be a transition in H which changes the topology, but which would be washed out on the thermal state level, which wouldn't correspond to an actual transition on the thermal state level.
No, this is Well, I mean, again, from this argument, here you can see that all the properties which are picked up by the polarization of density matrix are these of a pure state, right? So if there is a discontinuity of in the properties of the pure state, it will directly lead to a discontinuity there. So there is no washing out in that sense. I mean, what the thing which is of course true is if this P itself is not an observable, right? Because it's a phase of an observable only. If you should also look at the absolute value of that, and then what you will find that if you go to very very high temperatures but still finite, and then you are going through a phase transition in the Hamiltonian, then it will be more and more difficult to actually observe this if you directly want to observe the polarization, which I didn't talk about, but in principle there's a measurement scheme for the polarization where the signal strength contains the absolute value of this object. So higher and higher temperature basically means that the signal strength gets down and down and down, gets more and more difficult to actually observe it in that quantity. Yeah. So that is certainly true, but as long as you only look at the phase, there's only this discontinuity.
Right. I guess it's just that the phase is only well defined. Like the binding of the phase is only well defined if the absolute value of that guy is 1.
Exactly.
If it's like less than 1, you could, in principle, adiabatically make it 0. No. Like if it's continuous.
No, it's the other way around. In this expectation value, the absolute value of this is always less than or maximum 1, right?
Right, it's exactly 1 in a pure state.
It is, well, not always, but it could be, yeah.
I mean, x is a real operator, right? X gives me a real eigenvalue, so e to the I, 2 pi, x should be.
If you're in an x
eigenstate,
of course.
Yeah, no, in any state. I mean, x is a Mersenne, right? So it has real eigenvalues. So this operator, e to the I, 2 pi x, is always of absolute value 1.
Yeah, but you cannot deform it.
It's always unitary?
No, no, I mean, you have. Can have a mixture of a superposition of x eigenvalues which are on the unit circle, and then you can get can all get zero, right? You have to get zero because, I mean, consider t to zero, you make a phase transition here. Then the phase transition will actually exactly mean that the expectation value of this object goes to zero because the logarithm is
at a phase transition, yes.
Right, at a phase transition. So, and also at the phase transition, it's a pure state. So the expectation value of this one, even in the pure state, is not 1. The absolute value can be anything. It's less than 1, but not more than 1. But you cannot continuously deform it to 0. No.
I mean, I guess the idea is as soon as something is not quantized to either 0 or 1, as soon as it's a real number, there's no reason why it shouldn't be any real number. 0 is a real number as well. There's no reason why it shouldn't be continuously be able to make it 0. Normally what people argue about, like how they argue is they say things are quantized, they can only be integers, right? So they cannot be, by tiny changes, they cannot be changed away from an integer.
That's exactly. The point is that the binding of such a phase is a multiple of 2 pi as long as the phase is well defined.
Yep.
The only condition which we required for the phase to be well defined is that this object here is non-zero. Mm-hmm. If it's zero, then then you're exactly at the point of a phase transition. Shall we just discuss in a smaller group? I mean, we can also, of course.
I think that at some point we should sort of start to wrap up. So the questions, if you have questions that you think are of very broad interest, then maybe we should keep asking them. But if you have specific things that we should go into more detail, maybe stay afterwards for more detailed discussions. So any questions of general interest and relevance?
Topological states of method were introduced to classify new phases which fall out of the Landau paradigm, which means we want to find states which are robust to a lot of properties. Here it seems there is a property, but it's extremely fine-tuned to the special Gaussian states. So how robust is this topological quantity?
The only thing I can say is that the most of the literature on the topological insulators are non-interacting fermion systems, right? So these are Gaussian states. So all what we're doing here is by no means worse than the whole classification of topological insulators.
In any solid state physics, the interaction is weak, it doesn't matter. So integer quantum always a quantized conductance,
right?
Not because it's non-interacting,
right?
Because the interaction is weak.
Right.
So I disagree that it's just the classification is based on non-interacting systems. Yes. But we always can add interaction. So the question is.
No, all I want to say is these calculations were done for Gaussian systems because there you can, of course, make all of the use of the machinery which you have and can prove things like this. Right? So what the teaser which I gave here in interacting systems but this is what we are now writing up and it's not completely finished, but if you like, we can talk in private about it, is that exactly the same property carries over to interacting systems. And we have done numerics on this extended superlattice Bose-Howard model at finite temperature. And the calculations are not that trivial, in particular because you have to calculate this nasty object, this polarization thing there, which is a many-body object, but one can do it. And also this confirms that at finite temperature, things like particle transport go away, right? But the winding of the polarization, that stays fine. So I would even dare to say that I believe that this carries over to perturbations in terms of interactions. But we have one point of numerical evidence and almost proof.
So. A last quick general broad question. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.